And we're here to take in the case of a code of conduct complaint, to consider the complaints against TPC 12718 against Justine Bembridge Paper A. A lot of factual issues. The investigation officer is to present the evidence of facts of which they rely on and call any witnesses. We have Samuel Wiggins, investigator.
Chairman, before we start, I looked through the guidance and advice for investigations and so on and so forth, and it does say that if the investigation officer has done his investigation and found there was no breach, then the matter stops there. So I'm a bit surprised as to why it is actually at this appeal subcommittee today.
Well, I'll take advice from my monitor officer there.
Yeah, the procedure is that if an initial assessment of any complaint finds that there is no breach at that early initial assessment stage, then the matter doesn't proceed to investigation. Here, there was no finding at the initial stage of being no breach, and it was considered appropriate to refer the matter to investigation, and the outcome is this appeals hearing. So it's a question of the initial referral of the complaint would potentially have resulted in there being a finding of no... If there's clearly a no-breach situation, that's where the matter ends. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't that in this particular case, which resulted in Mr. Wiggins conducting a very extensive investigation and the appeals hearing having to consider that.
It does say under the guidance and advice that under investigations, investigation officer will find either A, no breach of the code of conduct in which the case stops there, or a breach of the code of conduct.
Well, sure, this appeal hearing is looking at the evidence produced.
But the investigating officer has deemed there's no breach of conduct, so therefore that's why I'm puzzled why we're here today.
Well, I've been asked to chair a field meeting, so I'm not an expert in legal law, and hopefully the monitor officer can give me some advice on this.
Yeah. There's sufficient information and evidence to... there's no conclusive outcome. The investigating officer's recommendations are one thing. Chairman, you've got to consider all the evidence in front of you, including the views of the designated independent person and indeed Councillor Steen before any conclusion has been reached. No conclusion has been reached at this stage.
Okay, thank you. So we will carry on with the
The final line of the investigating officer's report says, I find no breach of the code of conduct. That's the final line of the report.
And Chairman, that's the investigating officer's recommendation. It's not the finding of this panel.
It's not the finding of the panel. Are you happy with that?
Not really, but please carry on.
Okay, Simon.
Apologies, members. I'm obviously drafted some notes to remind myself of this investigation. It has been, obviously, unfortunately, been an additional piece of work to my normal day job, and therefore, obviously, I've dipped in and dipped out as and when required. Hopefully, and obviously, I wouldn't have any reason to doubt that members have had a chance to read the covering the investigation report, and obviously, they've also been supplied with the accompanying confidential appendices that contain, obviously, information that would not be appropriate to put into the public domain. In my first submission, obviously, I'm going to touch on just the points of fact, if I may. And obviously, I'm not going to go through the whole report because I'm sure, as I say, you've already read it, but there's a couple of points I'd like to bring out, maybe just for clarity. So, if possible, I plan not to openly reference detail within the confidential appendices, although I will provide members with page number referencing in order that any submission can be followed. I also, just to make it clear right from the start, have no plans to call any witnesses, and again, I think you'll probably see from my covering report that this wasn't an action that would have necessarily been witnessed. The action that was taken would have been witnessed afterwards by people that could view it online, but the actual pressing of the button to publish whatever was published obviously was not possibly witnessed by anybody, so I don't plan to call any witnesses, just to make that clear. So may I start by stating that this has been an interesting case in which there's been, in my mind, an alternation either in favour of the initial complaint or against. you know, it was one way you could read it one way, and there was perhaps a clear breach if you looked at it one way, or when you look at the facts and take other things into consideration, there wasn't. So it's been an interesting case for me. So I won't say thank you for the opportunity, but it's certainly been of interest. In simple factual terms, the complainant submitted a complaint alleging that Councillor Steen had breached the Benbridge Parish Code of Conduct in force at the time through openly publishing confidential information via the social media. A copy of the context of that complaint is contained in Appendix A, Item I, which is on page A14 of the report for members of PAC. Therefore, the first point of fact to be proven was that such a publication was indeed posted. I have included evidence that this was the case, and have included the proof at Appendix A, XI, on page A76 of the members' report. Basically, I asked a staff member colleague to go onto the social media webpage, because obviously I wouldn't have access to that type of social media, but some of our colleagues have for communication reasons. And I managed to get them to pull off a screenshot of the actual post to prove that it was actually posted. And furthermore, from that posting, it is clear from that evidence that Councillor Steen was the origin of that post. So the post was made in the name of Alistair Steen. A further point of fact for determination was the code of conduct in place at that time, and confirmation of the fact that Councillor Steen had, on election for his acceptance of declaration of office, committed to observe the code of conduct as it applied to elected members of Benbridge Parish Council. This is, again, has been a proven fact, and again you can observe that if you so wish on page A47 of the members' pack. Basically, it is a declaration of office signed by Councillor Steen upon election, where he did commit to say that he would follow the code of conduct, as indeed you'll all be familiar with as elected members yourselves, no doubt. I felt it was important to establish that whilst Councillor Steen had agreed to observe the code of conduct, was there any evidence to support his attendance to any formal training on this subject? Meeting the training requirements of any town and parish council is a matter for them to determine within their normal processes, is not normally undertaken in the full and is normally undertaken in the full knowledge of the clerk. Therefore, members may note that I sought any evidence or confirmation as to Councillor Steen's training record, specifically on the code of conduct. And I sought that information from the clerk of the Benbridge Parish Council. Members will no doubt have seen the response provided to my inquiry to the clerk, and that's contained on page A48 of the pack. And therefore, for a number of pages afterwards, I've included the information of what training was provided. It's a slide pack of what that training was all about, so I could ascertain as to whether it actually touched on anything to do with code of conduct matters. Based on that response, I could confirm that it's a statement of fact that Councillor Steen has not undertaken any code of conduct training. That said, in deviation to my conclusion that all other issues I've taken into consideration are a true fact, I must at this point bring members' attention to Councillor Steen's response to my supply of the draft report, which is supplied at A78 of the pack. While it is clear that Councillor Steen is in agreement with the report as supplied, he does refer to the fact that he had in fact attended code of conduct training provided under the auspices of IWELC in 2018. He makes the additional point that indeed his attendance at such training led to submission of a separate code of conduct complaint that was not upheld. Members will hopefully appreciate that I must take the information that has been supplied to me upon request at face value, and that it would have been incorrect for me to have had knowledge, unless of course I'd been involved, in any other complaints in relation to either Councillor Steen or any other members of Benbridge Parish Council. I would therefore suggest it is for the committee to determine which out of the two conflicting statements is indeed fact, and more importantly, to determine how much relevance or impact that might have when concluding their views or recommendation. Hopefully I've explained that in reasonably plain English. I was told by the clerk what training Councillor Steen had had. Councillor Steen has come back with a contrary answer, which I would not have had knowledge about, because I wouldn't have gone digging around looking to see what other complaints have been made, because that's not within my gift to start researching other people's complaints, knowing facts that I don't need to know. Having established those facts, the next and possibly the fundamental issue relating to this case was considering if there was evidence of fact to determine that the information published by Councillor Steen was confidential. For this, I sought copies of both the public and confidential members' copies of the agenda. These can be viewed at page A63, which is the public version, and A64, which is the confidential version. At this point, the facts become a little more murky. The members will note, as highlighted in paragraph A.14, which is page A7 of the covering report, there were subtle differences between the public version content and that supplied confidentially to members. I say that as both versions appear, as they were supplied to me, to contain a watermark stating confidential. Putting that matter aside, and presuming that members were provided with the confidential members' copy, it is clear that there was the intention to exclude the public and press for item 7, and the watermark indicated that the information contained on the agenda supplied was confidential and not for publication. That, in my mind, is a proven fact. Furthermore, it is in my mind a clear statement of fact that Councillor Steen was in the full knowledge that the content of the agenda was confidential, and indeed he confirms such in his response to the initial assessment undertaken by Mr. Justin Thorne, and that's at page A31. Whether the facts that I have established amount to a breach of the code will form part of my next submission to the committee, and I'll rest there. So whether the publication of that actual information constituted a breach, I will come to, but obviously I haven't made a determination in this. I'm just stating the fact that, as supplied, Councillor Steen was aware that it was confidential, but he did, as a statement of fact, publish that information. Whether it constitutes a breach, I will come to as part of the next part of my submission, if I may, just so Councillor Steen can understand why I'm not touching on all of the points in one go. That basically is my submission on statements of fact. Obviously, being in this position, I'm hopeful that the report is reasonably straightforward and members have managed to follow it. And obviously, there is an opportunity if you want to ask any questions, but I may have to defer to the monitoring officer if there's anything I'm unable to answer. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the investigation officer?
What's your opinion on a parish council having two agendas, one of which is confidential and one of which is public? Can you really address that issue in your report? It does seem rather strange to have two agendas. Is that a common practice?
In my opinion, councils, whether that be town, parish, authority, unitary, whatever else, are supposed to err on the side of being open and transparent. Therefore, the presumption is that the majority of business undertaken by town and parish councils or local authorities is done in public session. However, that's not to say that we don't have opportunities where sometimes something is likely to be discussed that is confidential, and therefore there is a need to have a confidential element of a piece of business that is going to a committee. Only this evening, the meeting of the Cabinet this evening, it will be considering a report where part of the report is public, and it's made quite clear within the publication that also part of that item is confidential. So therefore, it's not, in my mind, common practice to have two agendas, one that's public, one that's confidential, but it's not unheard of. I don't know if the monitoring officer's got anything further to add on that, but that's my understanding of the legislation.
What the monitoring officer's got to say on that subject.
Can I just follow up on that? I mean, I am aware from my own experience that there are occasions where two agendas are published. But in this situation, we have a public agenda that is stamped confidential. And I would expect the public agenda not to be stamped confidential, because that, to my mind, is the purpose of having two agendas.
I think you'll find, members, I did try to challenge
yeah.
that within my submissions back
yeah.
between the clerk
yeah.
And myself as part of my investigation.
That.
Whether it was an error on their part, I can't speak for the clerk. I can't give an answer as to why. But obviously, it does muddy the waters because it's very confusing to have a public agenda that's then got
confidential
on.
Because it controverts that. Can I just ask, are there factual rules regarding what constitutes confidentiality in an agenda, or is that a matter for the clerk and the chair or mayor to determine?
There are, I think I'm speaking of from my experience as the Isle of Wight Council,
mm-hmm.
There are a number of restrictions that you need to consider. If you're going to publish personal information about a person's finances or information about a business or perhaps a contract that you're entering into and you're at the, you know, the award stage, so you're still in, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
If you're at those stages, then there is a need to have a conversation about do we need to go into confidentiality. You might be discussing, for instance, an item that might go to licensing. It could be an application for a personal license, and you could be discussing someone's possible criminal record, something like that. That's not something that we should be putting into the public domain.
But there is a distinction between going into private session and having a session usually at the end of an agenda where you pass a resolution to go to private session for part of the agenda.
Mm.
But it would appear that the whole of this agenda is marked confidential. So I struggle with what the justification for marking the whole
agenda. I think you'll find I did try to seek some clarity onto who made the decision to determine that the whole of that agenda or even anything on that agenda was confidential. And obviously I've received inconclusive responses to those inquiries. I can't say that the Isle of Wight Council are experts at everything because I don't want to say that we are. We all make errors, but in my mind, as the lead on democratic services, this is not the way that we would have published the agenda if we had followed this. We would have made part of the agenda confidential, but the rest of it would have been public.
Were the public present at that meeting? Because if to my mind, if an agenda is marked confidential like that, then a resolution would be expected to be passed at the beginning of the meeting.
I believe, I wasn't at the meeting, but I believe it was a meeting that was open to the public, and at that, and when they reached the point of item 7, they would have taken the opportunity to exclude the public and press.
So they were,
there is an anomaly.
Obviously, Councillor Steen was there, I wasn't.
Okay, thank you.
You just clarify what I was thinking, so that's...
Just going back to the code of conduct, have you got any records from IWOP say that you've attended code of conduct training?
There is. As a member of IWOP, I can say that I have been at a code of conduct session at which Councillor Steen was present.
Exactly, that's fine.
It does
yes.
say, sorry, it does say in Mr. Wiggins' report that I received from the clerk, there was a date of the 14th of December.
14th of March.
It's actually stated in here.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm trying to find the page. On the listings of the attendance, it does state the 14th of December, but it doesn't. What it doesn't state from the slides that were supplied is whether the code of conduct was, I don't think it was actually covered in that particular meeting because it was a meeting to deliver councillor training, which I myself have been to, not encompassing code of conduct or specifically.
I mean, as I've already explained to members, it depends how much weight you put on the fact that Councillor Steen did or didn't attend code of conduct training as to where you go with your findings or determinations. I can't obviously sway you on that. That's within your own gift. The only reason I made the point is obviously I have been asked to make a statement of fact, and I quite openly accepted Councillor Steen's counterpoint, and I thought it was important to point that out to you that he had attended code of conduct training.
Is that your page?
I was
49.
I was told not so.
Yeah, 849 actually says. councillor training, 14th of December, and it actually has stated, and also above that actually, 12th of December chairmanship. I'm not disputing that, but it actually states, so from your hours, Councillor Sean, are you saying that you did attend?
Yes, I attended
training.
The IWELP training on the 14th of March 2018, delivered by the then the monitoring officer, Mrs. Miles, and Mr. Thorne. You were there yourself, Councillor Andre, at my own cost of £50, because Bemidge wasn't affiliated. It was known to the council because it was raised in a council meeting, and there was a complaint to the monitoring officer by the then council chairman that I had in fact done so. So it's all on the record. There's no problem there. Can I go back to the monitoring officer's to the investigating officer's point about the watermarking of documents, just about all documents that go to council meetings are watermarked confidential by the council. Just about all of them. In fact, any email that goes out has a rider at the bottom saying the contents of this email are confidential, even if they are on the most minor, insignificant issues. There is confidentiality smacked over absolutely everything. And I was very aware of that, as the investigating officer pointed out, that there was a watermark on there. I thought very long and hard about that, but decided, because at the training that we were having...
Can I just stop you there, and we'll come to you individually on our next...
This is relevant to the point we've just made.
Yeah, but you have the chance, but I'll just get...
Okay.
As we go through. Any more questions for Simon? Simon, thank you very much for your time and your effort. Yeah. We'll call you back as we need you. On to the next one. The member complained of, and members of the hearing subcommittee. Would you like to give your point of view? Or?
Yes, I thought long and hard before...
Sorry, I'm not entirely sure that you had actually finished your... Had you actually finished your...
I finished my submission on fact.
On fact.
And now it's a matter for the committee to invite the member complained of to present anything he wishes to say on the points of fact only.
I thought long and hard before putting anything online for the obvious reasons of the confidentiality marking. But at the IWALC training, there was a discussion took place raised by a councillor, Jonathan Young, who I think was from Knighton at the time, actually asking about the confidentiality rules. And what we were told, Mr. Thorne explained this, that there has to be justification for marking something confidential. And we had quite a discussion about that, and that included the public interest, which is part of the code of conduct that you can reason is in the public interest. The item under discussion has been in the press for 2 years. It was a very serious issue, and to not tell the public what was being discussed, not the substance of what the discussion was, but just the headline item, I deemed to be in the public interest, and I went ahead and did that because I thought it was important that people came along. It is also important to note that the council will not allow the public in the public session at the beginning of a meeting to speak on anything other than what is on the agenda. If they don't know what the agenda item refers to, or that it's on the agenda, then they can't possibly speak. So engagement with the community is immediately lost at that point. So that was one of my justifications for wanting to let people know what was happening.
Thank you very much. Simon, do you want to follow up your...
I've got nothing to question Councillor Steen about. I'm happy with the information I've received.
Okay. And should we like to carry on with your final assessment?
I don't know if you want me to leave the room while you deliberate on the first part of finding if you've had any issue with the fact or if you wish me to carry on.
I think we'll bring them both together. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So I'm now going to move to my submission on whether the facts that were found amount to a breach of the code. So to be clear, as I explained earlier, there's no doubt the council esteem is aware of his actions, and again he's reiterated that to you now, and that the publication of the agenda content was not accidental. It could therefore be easy to assume that on the face of it, council esteem has clearly breached the code of conduct. Indeed, I don't mind admitting that that was my initial thought. However, it was necessary to dig further into the matter of the designation of the confidentiality of the agenda, the content of the briefing note members would have had sight of, and the level of detail contained in the post as made by Councillor Steen. All of these considerations require an assessment of whether the public interest balance outweighed the factors to exclude the information. Members will note that I go into much greater detail of this from paragraph 8.1.9 onwards in my covering report. I'm not planning to repeat all of it, I shall just pick the salient points if I may. I established that no particular report had been prepared for the item in question that had been classified as confidential. The only document submitted for discussion as part of item 7 was a briefing note that, out of interest, had not been marked as confidential. Accepting that the content of that briefing note was properly considered as confidential, hopefully members have had a chance to see what the content of that briefing note was and can understand based on my previous response to the answer as to why it would have been confidential, it's of note that Councillor Steen did not publish any details as contained therein, and only the agenda content. Indeed, I make the observation that it is unclear why the wording as contained on the confidential agenda was confidential, and members will note I've made significant efforts to establish that fact to my satisfaction without success. I have also noted that whilst full details of item 7 alluding to the discussion on the sale of 5 to 7 High Street were withheld from the public agenda under the confidential determination, there was a separate reference to details pertaining to the building elsewhere on the public agenda that was not deemed to be confidential or requiring the need to go into private session. I make this point that if the publication of details relating to 5, 7 High Street were confidential, it is unclear to me why item 5 was not deemed confidential, and yet item 7 was. Again, that's in the pack, members, hopefully you've seen that on the same agenda there was reference to 5, 7 High Street and matters relating to that that was outside of the exclusion, and then there was the piece we're talking about that was inside the exclusion of the public and press. Setting aside those details, it was necessary for me to understand the test that should be applied to determine what might be deemed in the public interest. I have set out some points within paragraphs 8.1.17 onwards explaining this, which I trust members have already read, so I have no intention of repeating that information. It's quite detailed legislation, court outcomes, things like that, that obviously I've referenced, which I don't plan to obviously repeat now. When applying these tests against this case in particular, members will note that I concluded that the public interest in this matter tipped in the balance of favour of disclosure. Therefore, I concluded in this specific case no breach was found. However, for clarity and for the recording, I reiterate that I only refer to the extent of the actions taken by Councillor Steen in this case alone, and wish to reiterate that this judgment does not set any precedent for the publication of confidential items going forward. Careful judgment would be required before considering any such action. So, just to make it clear, this does not set the scene for publishing confidential information carte blanche. Careful consideration would need to be made by any person considering doing it in its own merit. So this does not set the precedent going forward. That is my conclusion on whether the facts found a breach of the code of conduct, and obviously you've seen my outcome in regard to this case.
Thank you very much, Simon.
Thank you.
Steve, would you come back on that?
I would, and I thank the investigating officer for all his efforts in this case, and I'm sorry it's taken so long. Just for the record, it's not just a matter of having two agendas, one for the public and one for the private. On regular occasions, there are three agendas. What tends to happen is there is the public one goes out for public consumption and a private one for the councillors within the 5-day deadline. But actually in the private session, papers are handed out, and by the way, I should point out that you've got the advantage on me because the paper that I think refers to offer A and offer B and what have you hadn't been submitted to councillors beforehand and was only given out in the private session. And that what regularly happens is documents are handed out to each individual councillor and collected back in at the end of the meeting, which is why I don't have sight of that particular document. And those packs frequently have an agenda for the private session that nobody has seen before. So there is up to three agendas actually being produced on a regular occasion. And it does mean that some councillors, at least, are bounced into decisions that are then taken in that private session because they have no knowledge of what was coming up before. I throw that in there as, so you can see how this confidentiality thing is all-pervading. There is a difficulty that means that the vast bulk of anything that's of any import within Bembridge is kept completely out of the public eyesight. So although I accept the investigating officer's comments about it doesn't set a precedent, there are numerous similar issues of confidentiality like this one occurring on an almost weekly basis within Bembridge Parish Council. So it would be helpful if there was some statement about the general principles that can be drawn out of this particular case that could be used so that it can't be carte blanche across the piece of either Bembridge Parish Council or other town and parish councils, that it is permissible just to mark everything confidential and raise a complaint if somebody then does release something because they consider it to be in the public interest. Sorry, I don't know whether that confuses matters more, but I think it's important to raise that.
Chairman, I think it's helpful to provide context, but obviously I may just remind you that your concern is obviously about this matter alone, not perhaps considering how Bembridge operate in the wider sense. It sounds on face value, again I'm not going to give an opinion, it sounds on face value that there may be some differences of opinion on how items are published or whatever, but I was just draw members back to this case alone as part of your determinations today.
Can I just ask Councillor Steen to confirm what the exact, obviously we've got photos, but to confirm that in this particular instance was a separate agenda issued at that point of the meeting when you went
in
to
private session.
Closed, when you went into private session?
I can't remember because the agenda would have been collected back in and it does go back a long, long time for this. I think maybe not on this one, but because we hadn't seen the offer A and offer B paper that you've got before you, I would argue that that is a separate agenda being handed out because we had absolutely no idea that that was popping up and that we were going to be asked to make a decision on it. It certainly was not known to us that there was going to be a discussion about the leases on 5-7, and given that the occupant of 7 High Street was the losing bidder and that he was the leaseholder and had been promised publicly for 2 years that his lease would be renewed, to then take a decision having not given him the winning bid.
Yeah, that's strain off
the
case. So, it's strain off the case, but in answer to the question,
Specifically,
we didn't know about that agenda item, and we were bounced, and I would say that that was a third agenda that cropped up.
Have you any more questions for either Simon or...
Could I make an observation?
By all means.
As somebody that's in IWARC, and I often visit parish and town councils as part of that, I would say that the extreme confidentiality measures being taken by Bembridge are unusual, to say the least. I have not seen any of this two agendas at any other parish or town council that I've been to. Town councils, I know, do make things confidential, but usually the way it's done is that the papers are given out before the meeting, not at the meeting, so that councillors have time to read them before they go to the meeting, which would seem to me to be a reasonable way to do it. And whether or not something is confidential, as I understand it, is something which a decision which should be made by the chair and the clerk on reasonable grounds. So if people are being named or something, as you've given an example, that seems a reasonable measure. But I don't see how a parish council and a chairman can just make something confidential for their own convenience. They have to have some sort of reason to make things confidential. I would have thought, in the scheme of things, I mean, perhaps that's me just being sort of reasonable rather than the letter of the law, but it does seem to be a very unusual situation at Bembridge.
I think we can discuss that when we're in private session.
Have you got any more questions?
I just think it's important to know, Mr. Steen, that the complaint has not come from Bembridge Council, it's come from an individual as such. I'm just making a point to highlight that we're addressing Mr. Green's.
Just because the person who made the complaint is not a councillor
does not
mean that they weren't in cahoots with councillors.
I'm not demeaning that. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just putting it into context.
I was doing likewise.
Have you got any more questions for either?
No, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Simon, thank you for your time.
Leave the room while you deliberate,
yes,
and then I shall wait up at the chamber and await the recall to hear your verdict.
Thank you.
Everybody will.
I think we should not all adjourn. If you'd all leave the room, please, and we can just discuss these matters in hand.
There's a water fountain at the